Hey humans, I'm Rory, and this is the Human Strength and Nutrition Podcast. Today, we have performance nutritionist Scott Tindall to talk about the performance benefits of carbohydrates and creatine as a go-to supplement. We hope you enjoy. Scott, thanks for coming on the Human Strength and Nutrition Podcast. How are you?
Yeah, I'm very well. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, awesome to have you on, mate. Let's just get straight into it. Scott, could you start by telling us a bit about yourself and what you do?
Yeah, so my name's Scott Tindall. I currently work at True Protein as, part of the product team in terms of developing the products and keeping the science at True. My background is actually, I originally started as a physiotherapist. I studied at the University of Sydney. I then moved overseas and lived in England for 12 and a half years. And during that time, I went and did a master's in sports medicine and then postgraduate study in performance nutrition. And as a result of that, I was lucky enough to work across a number of professional sporting teams, including Leicester Tigers, and I did 3 seasons with them. Did contract work at Harlequins Rugby, worked with Great Britain with the women's and men's heavyweight and lightweight rowing team, worked at the Paralympics with the blind wrestlers, which was fascinating. And then after all of that, I was lucky enough to get offered a role as the head physiotherapist and team nutritionist for Oracle Team USA for the America's Cup that was held in Bermuda from 2015 to 2017. And that was an amazing experience to not only live on an island for a number of years, but also to be involved in what is the world's oldest sporting event. And then from there, I actually moved to America, worked for a biotech startup, which was a gut health company, which looked at blood metabolites. And that sort of had a profound effect on sort of my view on nutrition, where previously it was probably very myocentric in terms of muscle focused and performance focused, whereas then working for that gut health company sort of started to get me more interested in sort of that total health and well-being aspect or perspective for an athlete and for the everyday person. And finally, luckily enough, from that job, I was headhunted to go and work with the Toronto Maple Leafs in the NHL and did a season with them in Toronto, which was a bit of an eye-opener as they I probably had no idea how big they were, and turns out they're something like the third or fourth richest team in the world. So it was certainly an eye-opener into how things could be done. Not that money brings success, but it was certainly sort of the echelon of sort of where I've been in terms of my sporting experience. So that's a very quick sort of 20-year experience sort of snapshot, but I hope that helps.
That is quite the resume. And what brought you back to Australia?
So after I finished up at the Maple Leafs, I actually took some time out and I actually managed to get 10 months of traveling in. So I think I might have been one of the last people to actually do sort of some extensive traveling. I just felt the time was right to come back. I think parents aren't getting any younger and I have 2 sisters here with young families, and I just felt it was time to come back to Australia and sort of live in the good land. And so I decided to come back, and that's where I spoke to Ben, who's the CEO of True, and we had discussions even when I was traveling about the opportunity to come into the team at True and help out. And it just seemed like the right time and a perfect fit for what I was looking to do in that nutrition space.
Yeah. With that said, Scott, could you tell us a little bit about True Protein itself, like the philosophy behind the brand? You said it was a pretty good fit for you.
Yeah, I mean, my relationship with True came in 2015. So I reached out to Ben, who I think had just started the company, or it was probably a year in its infancy. And I actually reached out to them to be a sponsor for Oracle Team USA for the America's Cup. And he jumped at it, which Talking to him now about it, it was probably a pretty big jump or a pretty big leap for the company, because they had to actually get all the supplements to Bermuda, which, if you know anything about Bermuda, I think it's regarded as the most isolated island on Earth. So, you know, they did an amazing job, and I was just blown away by how good the product was. Certainly from a taste perspective, I think it is the best tasting product on the market. And then in terms of the way in which they position themselves and their philosophy behind the supplements, I think it just separates them from the rest of the market. And, you know, you only have to go through sort of something that Ben and the team have sort of really worked hard at doing is establishing a mindset at the company. And, you know, the five sort of taglines that we go through, and we do these every week, even in sort of stand-up meetings, which is, you know, be true, be you, be better, be balanced, be united. And, you know, we literally go around the company and say one of these as you go around. And it's that I think separates it from so many other companies that either I've been involved with from a professional sporting standpoint or just other companies that I have had involvement with. And it's that sort of underlying, like, this is what we're trying to do, that I think just separates them.
Wow, that's amazing. I've never heard those five taglines before, but
yeah,
powerful stuff.
Yeah, I think it can come across as a bit corny sometimes, like for outsiders who maybe see it and they might walk in and we're doing something like that, or, you know, giving an example of one of those mantras. And we do that at meetings as well, to say, like, you know, give an example of someone who's been better. And, you know, the number of stories that just come out week in, week out about the company, it's, you know, from production team to the you know, they're the ones who are actually blending the supplements in-house, which, again, if you come back to why the company is so unique and so good and why I believe in it, is because we actually control what we're making. We get all the raw ingredients and we blend them downstairs, and we have a production team that does that. And it's just incredible to see. And if anyone ever gets the opportunity to come down to, you know, the facility and see what's actually going on, it really is remarkable.
It's still at Brookvale, Scott? The facility's still at Brookvale?
Yeah, still at Brookvale, which is quite nice because I'm in freshwater, so it's either a 10-minute bike ride or a sort of, you know, less than 20-minute jog to get to work, which is great.
Yeah, right. And so why is it so important to choose supplements of a high quality?
Well, I think 100%. Before I worked at True, I think my view of supplement companies was potentially a little bit limited. And then you start to work in a company and you can see where shortcuts can be made. You know, if you wanted to get the cheapest ingredients, and a lot of those cheap ingredients come out of China, if you want to go down that route and you want to blend those type of products, then, you know, margins can be made and shortcuts can be made. But I think, you know, working at True, again, the philosophy is let's make the best possible supplements that actually provide the dose of the active ingredients in order for that customer to actually benefit from it. And so, you know, taste comes first, along with that effective dose of whatever those ingredients are. So, you know, we're not putting the sprinkles in, as we like to call it, where, you know, you can read so many labels and, you know, there's a hell of a lot of something in there, but maybe not a lot of anything. And so all the supplements are designed with that in mind, to not only taste amazing, but actually be effective. And then, you know, more often than not, we're looking at the price line going, oh shit. You know, it's the margins aren't probably there that a lot of other companies are making on that. But, you know, that's the decision we've made. And I think that's one that holds the company in sort of, you know, that utmost, I hold the company in the utmost respect because of that.
Yeah, for sure. All you have to do is have conversations with Ben and Justin to realize how passionate they are about it and how strong their integrity is. And yeah.
Yeah, and just so the listeners know, Ben is obviously the CEO, and, you know, he's hands-on. It's great. He obviously doesn't get, you know, so involved that it puts you out. But I love the fact that he's pushing me constantly. He listens to so many podcasts, reads lots of articles, and, he's like, what about this? What about that? And, you know, you try and disseminate between the BS and the science. And, you know, again, there is a lot of, I think there's a lot of confusion out there in the world of nutrition at the moment. And, you know, it's great that people are getting this information out, although I think, unfortunately, social media is driving a lot of the misinformation about, if we're going to talk particularly about nutrition. And I think what we're trying to do at True is at least separate, you know, that what might be regarded as social nutrition or diet advice versus what's actually going on in the research.
Can you talk, before this call started, we're talking about what you do on the side, working with triathletes and various other athletes. Could you talk a bit more about that?
Yeah, so, I mean, coming from when I worked at the gut health company in Boston, I was put in touch with a triathlete team called Purple Patch Fitness, which is run by a world-renowned triathlete coach called Matt Dixon. And he had one particular athlete called Sarah Pianpiano, who top 5, top 10 in the world, you know, an amazing Ironman athlete, yet still struggling with a lot of health issues despite, you know, performing very, very well. And so what we then went on to do was develop a program or a nutrition program that, you know, benefited her firstly from a health perspective with the goal of improving her health. And the philosophy behind that was if we can improve her health, then we should see performance improvements follow. And that was clearly the case with Sarah. And, you know, it took time. And I think that's the other thing is that working with especially those endurance athletes is it takes time to make long-lasting changes. And so, you know, over the course of we probably have worked together for 2.5, nearly 3 years. And last year in Brazil Ironman, she broke pretty much every record on that course. And I think ran, she might have been in the top 10 or 12th fastest race by any athlete, by an American athlete in an Ironman distance. And it was pretty exciting to watch, especially, you know, from where she'd come from with some of those health issues. So the program now is you know, based around fueling the athlete for the work that's required. And that sort of mantra comes from a professor called James Morton, and he's written a number of papers about carbohydrate fueling. And he wrote one paper in particular, which was titled Fuel for the Work Required. And it really resonated with me where I was seeing a number of endurance athletes completely underfueling. And probably a lot of that underfueling was, again, if we go full circle back to social media and, you know, this notion of high fat, low carb, it's going to cure you, it's going to make you unbelievable. And it's just not the case. And so starting to work with these athletes, getting them to better understand their dietary intake and understanding what fuel is required for their training and then appropriately applying that knowledge to their training sessions, what I've seen is not only improvements in health and improvements in performance, but, you know, more often than not, improvements in body composition and feelings of, you know, the energy levels being better, sleep quality being higher. So many elements of their health and their life just improving because they're actually now fueling for what they need. And it's, you know, that's, again, it's an education process. It's not a quick fix. It's not like giving a couple of pages of a diet plan or anything like that. I don't subscribe to that. I don't believe that. I don't know what you've got in your fridge. It's about understanding the principles and then applying those to your life so that that dietary intervention and strategy is actually sustainable.
Mm. Yeah, I think the underfeeding and the low carbohydrate intake is also pretty common in the functional fitness world. People are just flogging themselves with these high intensity workouts. And then if you've got a busy job on top of that, you don't get much time to eat throughout the day. You think maybe I'll give intermittent fasting a go as well and maybe try some keto too. And before you know it, you're just not having enough carbs, not having enough calories.
Yeah.
Maybe not having enough protein and, yeah.
And look.
Wondering why your performance is dropping, your libido's dropping, your recovery's not where it should be.
Yeah, I mean, you hit the nail on the head. It's like, I mean, for sure, all these dietary strategies, whether you talk about intermittent fasting, whether you talk about some higher fat, lower carb type feeds and things like that, they're all strategies that can be effective depending on what your individual needs are. And it's applying those when required. And I think more often than not, like if you're trying to perform at high intensity, there is no doubt based on the research that you require carbohydrates. I mean, if we're talking about oxidation rates and we're talking about intensity, then carbs become king. You know, the higher the intensity, the harder you're working, the more you're going to be tapping into carbohydrates as a fuel source. And unless you're actually used to using them as well, if you've been on a high-fat diet for a long period of time, then your ability to utilize carbohydrates in high intensities is actually diminished. And so the irony of this is they will stay on a high fat, low carb diet all the way through training. Yes, your body composition improves. You've got a six pack. Wow. You get to an event and you start to try and smash either carbohydrates or you don't have any glycogen on board because you haven't consumed any carbohydrates. And you're just going to, you know, as an American would say, you're going to bonk. You know, you just literally are going to fall flat in your face and have not much there. Now, people will argue, oh, that's not always the case. Those that then argue against that, I would say, where are you finishing? Are you finishing in the top 5 or are you finishing in the top 200? And that, again, that's a choice. If you just want to finish the race and say you did it in a ketogenic state or a high-fat, low-carb state, great, good on you. But if you're talking about finishing on the podium, I can guarantee you you're going to need carbohydrates to finish there.
Yeah, for sure. Back to your triathlete, your female triathlete earlier. Remind me her name, sorry.
Her name is Sarah Pianpiano. It's a bit of a mouthful, the final name.
You said, you know, you were a big part of it was just improving her general health, and that had the flow and effect of improving her performance. What sort of things, other than carbohydrate consumption by the sounds of it, what other things were you working on in regards to her health?
So, and Sarah doesn't mind me talking, we've done a few podcasts about this. It's, you know, she had some serious gut related issues, which a lot of endurance athletes do have because maybe their fueling strategies aren't appropriate again to what they're doing. So what we did was based on a lot of the Monash University work, which is looking at FODMAPs. So FODMAPs are types of carbohydrates that are fermentable, and they can... The irony with FODMAPs is that they can cause a lot of issues in terms of GI distress, but they also are responsible for resulting in the microbiome producing short-chain fatty acids, which confers probably total body health. So you have this sort of, position where you need to manage them so you're managing the symptoms of the client without then interfering with their total health. So what we did was put her on a low FODMAP diet for a period of time, really analyzed her food and made sure that she was consuming enough food. Firstly, she was probably underfueling. Her protein intake was extremely low, and I find that that's a common theme amongst endurance athletes. They don't associate protein intake with improved athletic performance, especially for an endurance type sport. They think about protein being only for people who do CrossFit or go to the gym or are bodybuilders, but their protein requirement is just as high as anyone else doing any sort of athletic ability or athletic events. So we changed her protein intake. She was eating sort of, you know, around 2.2 grams per kilo body weight, which for her felt like a mountain of protein. Her fat intake was adjusted to be in line with her menstrual cycle. So there is a lot of really interesting research relating to females not being the same as men in terms of the physiology, which makes complete sense. It's taken a long time for the research to catch up with that. And so adjusting, depending in phases 1 and 2, you tend to feed higher amounts of carbohydrate, reduce the fat. In phases 3 and 4, increase the fat. And that was very effective in terms of stabilizing her energy. And then lastly was carbohydrates and reducing the FODMAPs, so things like garlic and onion, which generally speaking are probably two of the FODMAPs that tend to aggravate people with sensitive guts, and usually reducing those at first has an immediate impact. And then getting her focusing on a lot of dietary so the carbohydrates in the forms of vegetables, eating a lot more salads, a lot more fiber, a lot more insoluble fiber, and then planning the more processed or refined carbohydrates around her higher intensity session. So, you know, it's a bit of a long-winded answer, but it is complicated. And I think, again, like when I read, you know, whether it be on social media or whatever, you know, these claims that you can fix something, you know, with just this diet, it's, for me, it just doesn't make sense. And it is intricate, and it takes, you know, it's a bit of back and forth between the client. There is dialogue, there's trial and error, and it's not giving up when one thing goes wrong. It's like, okay, let's keep pushing ahead with this. Let's keep just moderating it to see what actually works with you. And then eventually you find that sweet spot. Sorry.
My girlfriend and business partner, Courtney, she is learning a lot more about what you're talking about with the female, with, you know, women's menstrual cycle and how you've got to alter your nutrition and training around the cycle. So she will absolutely love to hear that, you know, you're on a similar sort of wavelength there. Just as a bit of a practical tip, and I'm going to preface this question by saying I realize that every individual is different, but a lot of our listeners, they do functional fitness training once a day for approximately an hour session. A lot of them are, you know, between their 30s and 40s, and they've got, you know, just office-type careers. What would you say as a starting point? Maybe if is there a formula based on body weight multiplying, like how many grams of carbohydrates they should have a day? Is there any sort of starting recommendation you could make for people who maybe aren't aware that they should be having carbohydrates doing this sort of training?
How do I explain this? So depending, first and foremost, the intensity of the session and the duration is probably going to determine how much carbohydrates they need. Secondly, sure, based around their goals, you know, if they're trying to lose body fat, then you're probably ultimately going to probably restrict some of those carbohydrates total throughout the day. If they aimed for, what would we be aiming for? It is a tough question, because I think ultimately it's so individualized in terms of what they're going to require. And it's probably going to be, I think their total carbohydrate intake is going to be dictated more by taking away the amount of protein and the amount of fat from their total calories, and then using the remainder of those total calories as carbohydrates. And that's probably the way I would, and that might be difficult for the listener to understand. If I give an example, so if someone is, let's say, a 50-kilo female athlete, and the total of protein intake that I would probably be recommending would be something like 110 to 120 grams of protein. They would be taking on something like 50 to 60 grams of fat. So whatever they weigh in pounds is what I would generally recommend grams of protein. So if they weigh 120 pounds in body weight, 120 grams of protein is what I'd probably recommend. Whatever they weigh in kilograms is how many grams of fat they can take. So if they weigh 50 kilos, take 50 grams of fat. Now, those two amounts, you can work out the calories from them. Four calories for every gram of protein, 9 calories for every gram of fat. You combine those two numbers together and take that away from your total calorie allowance for the day, and let's say that's 2,000 calories, for instance, you know, you're probably left with, I don't know, 150, probably more than that, 180 to 250 grams of carbs that they can spread throughout the day. And that's, you know, it is a tricky one, because it does take a little bit of math to understand how much you need. And then the reality and the practicality of it becomes actually very simple. Once you understand what you need, then applying the actual amounts to those specific feeds becomes very easy.
Yeah, sorry. I know it's a very specific and challenging question to answer because everyone is different based on their activity level, their training intensity, their goals and everything like that. But it's really good to hear that you said that about, you know, starting with approximately a gram of protein per pound body weight, because that's where we tend to start as well. And then a gram of fat per kilo of body weight is also really similar to where we start at the moment. And then really filling the rest up with carbohydrates based on your goal, whether you're aiming for a deficit or a maintenance or a surplus. Have I sort of summarized that reasonably accurately?
Yeah, that's. I mean, it's bang on. It's exactly what you're doing. I think, you know, from a very easy standpoint, like if someone is trying to, you know, provide themselves with enough carbohydrates, you know, on a daily basis, they're training probably an hour a day and it's fairly high intensity, then I'd certainly be looking at total carbohydrate consumption across that day between at least 3 and 5 grams per kilo of body weight. You know, if you're starting to think about getting above 5 grams per kilo of body weight, you're starting to think about loading a little bit more, and really you're probably doing more than an hour's exercise. And again, like the important thing for people to understand is that carbohydrates, you know, I was chatting to a friend this morning I ran into down in Manly, and you know, he's like, oh, I'm not really eating any carbohydrates or anything anymore. I'm just eating heaps of vegetables and salad. And I'm like, you do realize that carbohydrates are contained in salad and vegetables. And he's like, oh, yeah, of course I do. And it's like, you know, that misnomer between what carbohydrates are and they're bad for you. And it's like, no, they're not bad for you. It's just context. You know, carbohydrates in the forms of plants provide you with not just carbohydrates, but provide you with fiber, provide you with vitamins, provide you with minerals. They're low density, so you can eat a shit ton of them and feel very full, yet the total calorie intake is very low. And, you know, certainly a lot of my nutrition clients actually are based in America, and, you know, that notion of eating a lot of vegetables and salad is very foreign for them. And when they start doing it, you know, it's crazy the response that you get from not only from them psychologically feeling better and feeling fuller, and but then even from a physical standpoint, you know, they are saying, wow, I'm eating so much food, but I'm dropping body fat and I feel amazing. And, you know, it's just, again, that little bit of understanding, a little bit of knowledge of what you're actually doing and why you're doing it that makes the big difference.
So you've mentioned obviously veggies and salad is a big part of it. What are your other sort of go-to carbohydrate recommendations that agree with people's guts and, you know, everything else that is important?
Yeah, it's a great question because, you know, first and foremost, like I'm a big believer in food first and, you know, getting, you can talk, a lot of people will talk about hand sizing sort of recommendations, and you can talk about fists of vegetables, and I'll try and get, you know, clients to eat 2 fists of veggies at every meal, that including breakfast, you know, and they're like, salad for breakfast. I'm like, absolutely. You know, like you go to a fancy cafe and you have a nice omelet, they'll always put a side salad there. And I'm like, you know, make your cafe style eggs at home and have a big couple of fistfuls of rocket or baby spinach or whatever and some cherry tomatoes. And, you know, there's no reason why you can't eat that at breakfast. I mean, the only people who probably said that cereal is required at breakfast was Kellogg's. And, you know, you just need to think about food in a different way, I think, to do that. So, look, they're great. Then you can go down the route of slightly more denser vegetables, things like root vegetables, so your sweet potatoes, your potatoes, parsnips, things like that. And then going into sort of more higher glycemic food, so your rices, your pastas. And they're going to be, you know, you need those for when you need higher amounts of carbohydrates. And, you know, I'm not against using white bread and white pasta and things like that when it's required. And, you know, if you're about to go and do, you've got a quick transition or you've got, you know, you've done a, I don't know, you're getting up at 6 a.m. and you need something on board because you're about to go and do a high intensity 10K run, you know, a couple of slices of white toast with some jam on it, which is a low FODMAP, you know, condiment, it's perfect, you know, for fueling for a purpose. You know, I'm not going to be recommending white bread for, you know, a healthy snack, but when we're talking about fueling for what needs, for what is required, I'm going to, you know, definitely suggest that.
Sure. It always comes down to the context.
It's always context.
And what you were talking about with, you know, the sort of assumption around what you're supposed to eat for breakfast. I was on a cruise last year and I would always order lamb cutlets for breakfast.
How good.
And I was getting the strangest looks. Everyone else around me was tucking into pancakes and oats and cereal. And here I am eating lamb cutlets, getting weird looks. I'm getting my protein for the day.
That's great. I mean, again, you talk about protein, you talk about different foods, but, you know, like, and it's not that you need to eat more meals in order to control, you know, your metabolic rate. And I think we're all, hopefully most people are beyond that now and understanding that. But, you know, pulsing those protein feeds throughout the day, throughout whatever number of meals you're eating, does become important. And that total amount of protein that you consume during the day probably has a far bigger effect on your body in terms of body composition, in terms of health, immune function, than just consuming, say, a, you know, a protein shake, for instance, after a workout. You know, if that's your only protein through the day, you're missing the trick. A big thing I talk about with supplements is that I really think they should be called complements rather than supplements, because they should be complementing your diet rather than, you know, supplementing your diet. And it's if you can think about it in that way, like a protein shake, it is an essential, you know, I think it is an essential supplement for someone who is working out and is time poor, because it just allows you to get a snack in that is so good at providing the macronutrients that you probably require following what you just did in a very short amount of time. And that's where I think if you can get hold of a, you know, a protein supplement that is very high quality, then, you know, go for it. It makes life easier.
So sort of segued into the next question nicely. I was going to ask, you know, what would you say are the two most beneficial supplements that humans could be taking to look after their health and overall performance? And guessing, we spoke about this before the call, a whey protein or a protein of some sort is number one for you?
Yeah, I think, again, depending, if you're, you know, if you're a very light individual, then maybe a protein supplement is not going to be required. Although even with the lighter, you know, female athletes that I do work with, I find a protein supplement just allows them to hit that target. Because if you're very small, you then find even the smallest amounts of foods difficult to consume. So, you know, it just gives you that, you know, if you're very small, it gives you, you know, 20, 25 grams. If you're a big guy, let's say you're 100 kilos and you want to get down to 90, you're talking 220 grams of protein in a day. You know, that 40 gram protein shake, it takes a big divot off that total number. And I think that's really, really effective. So I think, look, something like the True Protein WPI 90, it's a whey protein isolate. It's the highest quality protein that you're getting, apart from a hydrolyzed protein, but they taste a little bit bitter. So I think, you know, in terms of the protein isolate, I think it's the best on the market, and probably I'm a little bit biased, but I think anyone who's tasted it, and I've had a lot of my friends tasting them regularly, they're like, wow, it just tastes like a milkshake. If you have an issue with lactose, I mean, the WPI 9, the whey isolate has less lactose than the concentrate. So that is one advantage of the isolate as well. If you did have an objection to, say, milk product, dairy, either from a moral standpoint or from a food preference or maybe an allergy, then, you know, something like the vegan 85 or plant protein is certainly worth considering. The only thing I would say to that is I would consider adding either branched chain amino acids or essential amino acids to that, just to bump up the amino acid profile. Because what you can see in studies related to comparisons of plant versus whey protein is they don't have the same amount of key amino acids. So pretty much leucine, the leucine content and isn't the same in a plant-based product versus a whey-based product. And if you can match those, that key amino acid, the leucine, just by topping it up you will see a very similar effect. So, you know, you don't want to talk about a plant protein being a lesser quality protein. However, the reality is the amino acid profile isn't the same, and the amino acid profile in a whey protein appears to be better at stimulating muscle protein synthesis and bringing about those positive changes. So that would be, protein would be my number one to think about if you were going to get into supplements. And then the second supplement would be creatine monohydrate.
Let's talk more about creatine.
Yeah, I think, and we were, you know, again, having, whenever I chat about creatine and someone says, oh, why would you take that? I always just counter that with saying, why wouldn't you take it? And usually, you know, the responses will come back, oh, it's only for bodybuilders, it's only for, you know, gym monkeys, oh, it gives you, makes you get massive, or it ruins your tendons. And it's like, no, 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 that is not the case. It is the most, I mean, I think I did a PubMed search, which is, you know, where you search for scientific journals, and I think there's 75,000 references come up immediately for creatine monohydrate, and it is the most studied legal supplement on the market and has been shown to be the most effective. And you talk about effectiveness in improving body composition, so reducing body fat, improving lean muscle, improving strength, improving power, improving endurance, even improving hydration. I mean, it's often said to me, oh, it dehydrates you. It's like, no, it doesn't. It actually has been shown to improve hydration. So for an endurance athlete, you know, who says, why would I take creatine? It's like, well, I just outlined five perfectly good reasons why you should. And then the last one, if you're talking about hydration, it may actually improve your hydration status. And then you go beyond sort of the muscle and performance aspects of creatine, and, you know, new research is looking at the neurological effect of it. And, you know, in terms of diseases such as Huntington's and Alzheimer's, and positive effects on potentially supplementation, where you have declined sort of stores of creatine in the brain, and maybe supplementing could improve that. And then further, you know, studies looking at immune function and the role that creatine might play in that. So, you know, you don't need to load it. It's a supplement that you just take daily. And I loved your comment about saying that, you know, treat it maybe like a macronutrient, or just treat it like a daily vitamin, and just have 5 grams in your shake every day. I can guarantee you, if you start taking it, you will start to see performance gains. You start to feel better. Your energy levels are better. And yeah, I cannot think of one athlete I've ever recommended that to, whether it be a professional or an amateur athlete, where they will be like, my God, I don't know what it is. Is it the creatine? Is it the whey? Is it the diet? But I feel amazing. And it's like, no one has ever said, oh God, the creatine's making me terrible. Mm-hmm. And the beauty about creatine is it's so bloody cheap. I mean, you're talking what? I think we sell 500 grams for, you know, it's $20 or something. I mean, it's crazy. And people will go and spend heaps of money on, you know, all these other supplements that really don't do half of what creatine does. And it's just, it is actually a no-brainer. And you don't need to be an elite athlete to be consuming or thinking about consuming creatine. It should just be a mainstay as much as protein in your diet that you just are taking 5 grams a day. And, you know, if you order a bag of protein, you order a bag of creatine. It's as simple as that.
And creatine monohydrate suffices perfectly, you know, like I'm sure it's just branding and marketing, but obviously there's a lot of different creatines out there. Like everything that I understand suggests that creatine monohydrate does everything we need, and it's the most
researched. Yeah, sure. All the studies are on creatine monohydrate. All the other forms, as far as I'm aware, there's a little bit of sprinkles, as I would like to call it. So, you know, and we, you know, we've even looked at that within, you know, the great thing you've talked, go back to True, is like, you know, one of the mantras is be better. And it's like we are, you know, since coming on board and looking at the supplements, it's like, you know, guys, let's get rid of the things that we don't actually believe in. And So some of those supplements are starting to be phased out where, you know, we're like, we can do better than this. We can make better products. And so you will see products be phased out and people will be like, why are they going? But it's like, okay, because we can make a better product than that, or it's not required. And so it's keeping it very, you know, high level, you know, very trustworthy. And that's what we want from customers as well, you know, that they can sort of, you know, that trust true. And I think it's so important that customers can ask us questions, provide feedback, and sort of, you know, challenge with what we're doing. The third supplement, if I was going to add a bonus supplement in, it would be, it's not something that we actually sell at True, but it's something that I think everyone should be very aware of, and that's vitamin D. I think vitamin D3 is one of the supplements that goes, you know, the research coming out about vitamin D is becoming, you know, stronger and stronger. And once where it was just thought to be related to bone metabolism and improving that, it's now well beyond that in terms of immune function, in terms of muscle function, in terms of just cellular metabolism, everything going on. And there's so many people, and it you know, we have a great skin protection program in Australia with Slip Slop Slap, but the reality is we're probably not getting enough sun now. And if you look at children these days, they're fully covered up head to toe, sunglasses, sunscreen. And the reality is you need sunlight and in order to produce vitamin D. And it is crazy when I always recommend to clients to get blood tests done, and there's a number of blood tests that, you know, I'd recommend, and it's not to have a blood type diet or anything. We know they're bullshit. But it's important to look at some of those markers, and your 25-OHD, which is your, you know, serum vitamin D3 level, it's predominantly either deficient or insufficient in so many individuals. And, you know, it is one supplement, again, super cheap supplement, but it's something that I would definitely recommend everyone sort of getting their levels checked. And then if they do require a supplementation program, then thinking about it.
Yeah, right. Just to go back to creatine, a question which I'm just a bit curious about and want to potentially have an answer to if anyone provides this question is there an amount of just meat and steak that you could consume to get your 5 grams of creatine a day, or is it, you know, close to impossible to get the creatine intake from food and supplementation or complementation, as you call it? Would you say that's always required to reach the 5 grams?
I did see a study about this, and it was really good because it was like, part of supplementation is, you know, also about ease, I think. And I remember saying you would have to eat something like 2.5 kilos of steak per day in order to get that equivalent of 5 grams. And don't quote me on the exact amount, but I remember thinking, geez, that's a lot of meat. And, you know, you toss up, you know, there's a lot of things that come into nutrition, isn't there? There's sort of your moral high ground of, you know, are you contributing to, you know, the fate of the world by consuming a lot of animals? And, you know, can you potentially just offset that maybe by, you know, and I certainly don't want to be eating 2.5 kilos of red meat every day, you know, to take a teaspoon of creatine in a shake every day. It seems a lot easier for me, and I'd rather be probably eating a bunch of, you know, some small oily fish and some nice sort of free range chicken thighs and, you know, some variation in my diet than sort of, you know, smashing down 2.5 kilo T-bone. So
I eat a lot of steak every day, and I don't get anywhere near 2.5 kilos. So
yeah, I think most people would struggle with that.
Mate, is there anything else you particularly want to talk about before we start to wrap up?
No, I don't think so. I think, you know, your listeners obviously are in that sort of, you know, as I like to think, we're all getting a little bit beyond sort of that, okay, it's just about looking amazing and sort of getting beyond that sort of mirror muscles, and it's thinking about total health. And I think there are some really exciting sort of products coming out in the nutrition and supplements world. And I think some things that we're looking at are True, you know, along the lines of nootropics and adaptogens and, you know, exploring those and, you know, what we're putting together, it's going to be really cool for, you know, the consumer who, you know, is the young professional who is trying to manage a work-life balance. And I think some of those sort of products, I find them personally very exciting, having used them for a period of time and seen the changes. And it may be something we discuss on another episode along the way.
Nice. We'll definitely keep an eye out then. And that stuff that if we just follow true along, we'll get that sort of information update.
Yeah, those sorts of things will be coming soon. And, you know, there's some really great products that we're going to be releasing, you know, in the coming months. And because, again, if we go back full circle, you know, my area of focus certainly is on endurance athletes, and something I believe, you know, that we identified at True as a team, that potentially an area where we're missing out on is that endurance range. And, you know, I think supplying the endurance community with, again, trusted quality products is something high on our list. And again, you know, coming soon, I think we're going to be dropping some pretty cool stuff. And I think the, you know, we've got an extremely strong following in the CrossFit and the gym community, but I think branching out into that endurance community and having them on board, you know, I think it's going to be really, really cool to see.
Exciting. Always things in the works at True.
There's always things going.
So Scott, yeah, could you tell people how they can find more from, first of all, True and also from you personally?
Yeah, so True Protein, I mean, it is it started as an online business, and I think that's the beauty of it as well, is that customers can find and get their products so quickly. So, you know, trueprotein.com.au, check out the website. Everything is on there. If they've got any questions, it's super easy to get in touch with our customer experience team of Kath and Jess, who are in charge of that. And, you know, they're wonderful and will certainly answer any questions, and anything that's a little bit outside their scope, then they usually push towards me and I'll get back to you. We try and keep it as personal as possible. And then in terms of my own personal website, it's tinlane.co. You can have a read about my story and, you know, see some testimonials and things that I do, and a few articles I've written thereabouts, and, you know, take it from there.
That's awesome. Scott, thanks so much for your time today. And yeah, as you say, hopefully we can do another episode sometime in the future.
Yeah, it sounds great. Thanks so much for having
me. All right, humans, that concludes the podcast with Scott Tindall. We hope you enjoyed. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast and leave us a review. Thanks for listening. Hey, legends. If you'd like a program to help you build strength, fitness, and athleticism, the Human Strength and Performance Program is for you. The perfect balance of strength, conditioning, mobility, and athleticism to help you achieve high-level physical performance. Head to humanstrength.com.au to find out more.